Hi and good afternoon. I'm Pardis, a PhD of computer science from Carnegie Mellon University. In the next 15 minutes, I'm going to talk about people's privacy preferences while interacting with IoT devices. This is also me at H3. I was going back to Iran from Madrid airport, and suddenly I found myself walking happily all alone. I was being lost at the airport. And one main reason that I'm here today is because of these IoT cameras at the airport that help police and family to find me that day. So it's true that I'm a big fan of IoT, but today I'm going to talk about how can we still be happy around these IoT devices without our privacy getting invaded by them. Being surrounded by all these IoT sensors will provide us with numerous opportunities and benefits. But how much do they exactly know what are they collecting? Or who are they sharing our data with? Or for how long are they keeping our data? By looking at the images on the right side of this slide, you may be able to guess two of these devices, like Fitbit or Amazon Echo. Fitbit is collecting your health information. Echo is collecting your voice. But what about the picture on the bottom? Isn't it just a cute Barbie doll? Actually, it is cute, but it can be creepy and cute. It's talking to you, it's listening to you, it's interacting with you. It's an actual IoT sensor. But you may not be able to guess this by just looking at it, because there is no visible sensor on it. We want to help people to make some informed decisions about their own privacy. In our research group, we are building a system that will inform people about nearby data collection scenarios and then give them some choices to control their privacy. For example, by turning off that IoT device. This system is essentially answering some questions that people may have about data collection scenarios. Our design has three main components. First, is to inform people about nearby data collection scenarios without overwhelming them. For that, we need to know what actually people want to be notified about. The second component is to give people some choices to control their privacy. To enable this feature, we should know what factors make people comfortable or uncomfortable about a data collection. Suppose that we know people are comfortable about a data collection. Does this really mean they're willing to allow that data collection to happen? If not, what are the factors that are not important to explain their comfort, but are actually important to explain their willingness to allow or deny that data collection? The third component is to make our system automated. For this, we need to know how well our system can predict people's privacy preferences. For example, if we can accurately predict that people prefer to turn off an IoT device in a particular situation, our system can just do it for them. To get answer for our design questions, we decided to capture a wide range of IoT data collection scenarios. One approach to study a broad spectrum of hypothetical situation is to run a vignette study. Vignettes, as Hills defined, are stories about individuals, situational structures, which can make reference to important points in the study of perceptions, beliefs, and attitudes. In our vignette study, we are asking participants to imagine themselves in some hypothetical data collection scenarios. Our scenarios are varied by 8 factors. But why 8? Some of these factors are coming from the previous studies. And some are the ones that we thought are important in the area of privacy and Internet of Things. Now I'm going to talk about the factors and some examples for each. The examples that I'm giving you here are not all the examples that we studied. But the examples that we studied in the paper are not all the possible examples in the world. There are a lot more. But they're the ones that we thought are a good representative of an IoT data collection. First factor is type of data collected. That can be video, audio, or fingerprint. Second factor is location of data collection. It can be library, home, or public restroom. Third factor is device that is collecting data. It can be presence sensor, smartphone, or iris scanner. Fourth factor is retention time. It can be data being kept forever or data being deleted immediately. Fifth factor is whether or not the purpose of data collection is presented in the scenario. Our next factor is who benefits from the data collection. Is it a data collector or the user? Whether or not the data is being shared with law enforcement or device manufacturer is our next factor. And the last factor is whether or not additional information can be inferred from the data collected. For example, what can be possibly be inferred from the video collection? Maybe it's your movement patterns. We had two types of scenarios. The first type are the ones which are more common and people likely have already experienced them. For example, you're at work. This building has cameras that are recording video of the entire building. This video is shared with law enforcement to improve public safety, and they will not delete it. The second type of the scenario are the ones which are not very common now, but maybe in near future. For example, you're at a department store. This store has an iris scanner that scans customers' irises automatically as they enter the store in order to remotely identify returning customers. Your iris scan will be kept for 1 week. We had 8 factors. That leads us to have about 120,000 possible combinations. But not all these combinations made sense. For example, an iris scanner collecting fingerprint is not a valid scenario. So we removed the scenarios that didn't make any sense. And believe me, this process took about 2 months. And we ended up having about 380 data collection scenarios. The minimum number of scenarios that could cover all the factors and all their levels was 14. So we gave each participant 14 different data collection scenarios. We recruited 1,007 Mechanical Turk participants from the United States. We had almost the same number of male and female participants. The average age was 35.3 years old. And our survey took about 15 minutes to be completed. The demographic information turned out to be a not statistically significant factor in our analysis. To address our three main design components, we asked some questions after each scenario. To address the first component, which was informing people about nearby data collection scenarios without overwhelming them, we asked participants to tell us whether they agree with the following statement. I would want my mobile phone to notify me every time, only the first time, or every once in a while this data collection occurs. And this is actually 3 questions, and each of the every time, only the first time, and every once in a while are coming in 3 different questions. And they could answer on a 5-point Likert scale from strongly agree to strongly disagree. To understand what are the factors that make people comfortable or uncomfortable with a data collection, we ask, how would you feel about the data collection in the situation described above? And they could answer from very comfortable to very uncomfortable. And to understand what are the factors that are not important to explain people's comfort, but are actually important to explain whether they want to allow or deny that data collection, we ask, if you had the choice, would you allow or deny this data collection? And they could answer from allow or deny. In order to achieve the best model that can describe people's privacy preferences, we ran generalized linear mixed model regression with random intercept for each participant. Then we applied backward elimination to find the factors that gave us best statistics models. Now I'll be talking about the models that we found. The first model is to explain people's desire to get notification about a data collection every time it happens. We found that when people's biometrics are being collected for an unspecified purpose, people are most willing to get notification. On the other side, when their presence is being collected for a purpose that they didn't find to be beneficial to them, they are least willing to get notification every time it happens. And the factor that had the least impact on their desire to get notification was when their data was being collected at a department store. The next model is to explain people's comfort or discomfort with the data collection. We found that people are most comfortable when their video is being collected in the scenarios that they thought are happening today. For example, they were comfortable with about 69% of these types of scenarios. Also, people are most uncomfortable when their biometrics are being collected. And the factor that had the least effect on their comfort or discomfort is when their data is being kept forever. And the last model is to explain people's willingness to allow or deny a data collection. We found that comfort is not necessarily equal to allow or deny a data collection. When people's video is being collected at a department store, people are most willing to allow this type of data collection. For example, they were willing to allow 66% of these type of scenarios. Also, they're most willing to deny the data collections when their presence is being collected at the workplace. And the factor that had the smallest impact on their desire to allow or deny the data collection is when their data is being shared. As I said in the beginning, one of our goals is to make some privacy automated tools to make decisions on behalf of the user. Here, we first trained the algorithm on a subset of data, and then we tested on the remainder data. And we found that in 80% of the scenarios, we can accurately predict whether a participant is comfortable or uncomfortable with the data collection. Also, our system can make decisions on behalf of the user to allow an IoT device to collect data or prevent it from collecting data with an average accuracy of 79%. To wrap up privacy preferences, our results show that people are more comfortable with anonymous data types, like temperature. As a participant said, I'd be fine with data that doesn't identify me. Also, people are more comfortable with public locations versus private locations, like library. As a participant said, I'd be comfortable with public spaces, absolutely not comfortable in my home. Our results also show that among all the factors that we studied, the type of data is the most impactful factor. However, it turned out that the interaction of two factors are more important than each factor individually. For example, in the model to explain people's desire to get notification about a data collection, the interaction of data type and user perceived benefit is the most effective factor. In the model to explain people's comfort with the data collection, when data type is being interacted with happening today, it becomes the most impactful factor. And in the model to explain people's willingness to allow or deny data collection, the interaction of data type and different types of location has the largest impact on people's desire to allow or deny that data collection. As I explained in the beginning, we are building a personalized privacy system that will inform people about nearby data collection scenarios and then give them some choices to control their privacy. To build this system, we had to understand about people's privacy preferences. So we built some privacy models. The models that we built in this study are based on user self-reported responses. However, their actual behaviors are often different from their self-reported behaviors. To make this study one step more realistic, we are going to run the second stage, which is an experience sampling in a more realistic setting. Now I'd like to thank my co-authors, Shruti, Martin, Hanna, and our advisors, Luyo, Lori, and Norman. I'm Pardis, and thank you very much for being here today.
Hi, well, thanks for giving us a nice talk to close off the conference with. You mentioned in the beginning that one of the things you were exploring was people's ability to guess at what might be inferred from the data. Yep. I think you didn't have time to tell us about that in the talk, but could you comment? Do people have much ability to figure out what's inferable or not?
So actually, we didn't ask them to guess what it can be inferred. For example, if you want to check the inference as a factor, we just put it in the scenario. We didn't let it for people to guess. It was one of the factors in the scenario.
I see. So people don't know whether the data is being, they're not differentiating between whether it's being inferred or being collected, like raw data versus inferred
data.
Yeah,
that's true. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. Sure.
I like the idea of kind of automatically trying to help make some of these decisions for us. Some decisions are harder to make than others, especially automatically. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you had any idea about what some of the factors are that are harder to make decisions with versus easier decisions with. Easier decisions seem like ripe for automation, whereas harder decisions you might want to leave for the user. And so I was wondering if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, so it's not 100% sure that we are going to just make this system fully automated. It's going to be automated at some point if we have enough training data that we can really make decisions for all the situations. But it's not very trivial that it can be fully automated. And as you said, some decisions are really hard to make, even for the user. So at this point that we don't have enough data, we are not thinking to make it fully automated. But in the future, this is our goal.